You imagine it's Saturday, you're in Hawaii enjoying a mahi-mahi sandwich, and all of a sudden you get notification that there's an incoming ballistic missile heading for your skull, and you're on an island, and there's nothing you can do about it. The missile's on its way. This happens at a location that way back World War II had a similar horrible situation to it. So they were already like, oh, crap. And so you get the notification, you grab your children, your loved ones, you try to stash them in locations where you won't get blown up too much. It's the most horrifying scenario that a human being can possibly conjure. You 1,000 questions, nothing to do but squirm and kiss your ass goodbye. Look at your family and say, this is it. I cannot even imagine going through that. All because a guy hit the wrong button in the Hawaiian state government, causing alarm and panic. Here's the bad part. As if any of that is good. The only good part about that is that you're enjoying a mahi-mahi sandwich. Beyond that, there's no good part. Immediately, the guy that hit the wrong button would immediately know, oh my God, I hit the wrong button. The entire state of Hawaii is panicking and kissing their ass goodbye. Let me tell you something. If I had anxiety that day and I lived in Hawaii, that could have killed me. That could have killed me. The guy that hit the wrong button, apparently, I don't know if he was alone in the room or whatever. By the way, that kind of reaction just from hitting one button? I don't know. I'm a little scared now about what the president's got on his desk. That's now scaring me somewhat. Once you hit the wrong button, this Hawaiian employee there, hitting the wrong button, wouldn't you immediately call somebody and say, excuse me, Bob, I hit the wrong button. I think panic is setting in and people think they're going to die immediately. We must tell them immediately that the wrong button was hit and everything's okay. Okay, but let's wait 40 minutes because I got to finish my sandwich. What? How does it take 40 minutes for the public to be advised that a guy immediately hit the wrong button by mistake? What are you coming up with some kind of a political spin first? I mean, if it takes 1 second to hit the wrong button, it takes another second to hit the all clear button and say, it's okay, don't worry about it. Back with Pearl Harbor, we didn't have Facebook or Twitter or texting. Let me tell you something. I'm immediately advised by the government if something is happening that is not life-threatening. If you change your status in Facebook, I'll know that like a minute later at the most. Probably 45 seconds to a minute later. If a government or a city or a town says, oh, there's a snow emergency, there's a parking ban, they put it into the system. Within about a minute or two, it's coming up on my phone, there's a parking ban. How did it take so long to tell everybody, 40 minutes, that I'm sorry, we pushed the wrong button? I sometimes don't understand things for a very good reason, because it makes no sense.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I think I like mahi-mahi. I'm not sure.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's,
back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Huli. Do you know what I believe in greatly in my life is consistency? Consistency. It's a magic word for me. It's why for the past 25 years, I've been doing a radio show every single morning, except for weekends, when I sleep late, we'll say. Every weekday for the past 25 years, because I want to be consistent about something. I think it's important to have some structure in this journey that we're all taking together, which is called life. I think in some regard, you have to say, you're consistent. Now, Trump is consistent. He's consistently a moron, a lowlife, and a despicable character. He's consistent. I give him that. Kudos to you, babe, for that. That's my consistency. I do this every day, every weekday. What's your consistency? What are you consistently doing? What can people depend on you doing without fail? Are you loving? Can people say to themselves, I'm not feeling very good today. I think I'll give Jimmy a call because he's loving. Whenever I talk to Jimmy, I feel better about myself because Jimmy's consistent in that way. When you go to the grocery store or the supermarket or whatever you call that place where it has food that they sell you with aisles of food and stuff, if you want cereal, if you want cornflakes, if you love cornflakes, I don't know who would, but if you love cornflakes, when you pull that Kellogg's cornflakes box off the shelf, you know exactly what you're going to get in that box. Those cornflakes, flake by flake, have been the same for nearly a century now. Consistently. That cornflake is going to taste the same. Unless it leave the box open and it gets kind of, goes bad. But you know what's in that cornflakes box. The cornflakes box from the store, the market basket cornflakes, and they have to change the name. They can't call it cornflakes, by the way. So they call it Market Basket Corny Flakies or corn shavings, whatever they call it. That's not consistent. That's not what you expect. That Kellogg's Corn Flakes is going to be consistent. The General Mills Cheerios, that's going to be consistent. We long for consistency. Something has to be consistent. Something. Something where everything that's going wrong and is firing in all different directions off the wall and ricocheting into your brains, something has to remain consistent that we have to put our hands on and say, I'm holding on to this because I can always depend on it being there for me. Always. Can't do that with people. Can't do that with people. People change. They go through moods. I don't feel very good today. I feel great today. You can't depend on that. You don't know what their reaction is going to be. It depends on what they've been going through. You can't depend on people. People aren't consistent. What they do can be consistent, but people are not. It's products. It's things that are consistent. Like cornflakes and Cheerios. They're consistent. They never change. And that's why we love cereal so much. Because it never changes.
Whatever.
Mahi Mahi. I can't get off of that. I think I had Mahi Mahi once. I'm not sure. Why do they name the fish twice? Why isn't it just Mahi? Is it that good? Let me tell you something. I went to a restaurant, a seafood restaurant recently, and the Mahi Mahi was on the menu. Along with pizza. And I didn't understand. I thought it was a typo. I thought, hey, you know, they got Mahi. They wrote Mahi twice. No, Ron, that's the name of the fish. Why? Why is it? Was it named by somebody who stuttered? Probably. Otherwise, what was the point of that? How can you name something the same thing twice in a row and give it that name? It's something's wrong somewhere. Something happened that was wrong in naming that fish. There's no way. Do you want a hamburger? With french fries? You don't name things twice like that. Something's wrong with the Mahi. So I went to the restaurant, and there's all kinds of fish on the menu. There's salmon, or Salman Rushdie, as we call it. That's the only fish that swims upstream. Stupid fish. I call it stupid fish. Excuse me. You're swimming upstream to lay your eggs? Something's wrong with that fish, too. And oddly, these fishes go to school. There's schools of fishes. There's a whole student body. But half of them are swimming up the wrong way. Get with the program, man. So the salmon is quite expensive on the menu. There's cod, which I don't even understand what kind of fish that is, but cod's on the menu, and tilapia. All of a sudden, like 10 years ago, all of a sudden, tilapia is showing up. This thin little sunfish kind of thing. Tilapia. Are you serious? Is that a fish or a thin slice of something? What the hell is that thing? Tilapia. Very popular because it's cheap, that's why. So that's on the menu. And these things are like, you know, maybe it's like $15, $18 for the salmon or the cod or something like that. Breaded cod with a little, you know, a little seafood stuffing or something. And then there's the Mahi Mahi. And I don't understand why this fish, for some reason, is like $75. What makes this so special? Is it because you're saying the name of it twice in a row? Does that jack up the price? We're taking up more space on the menu. We have to pay for that somehow. I don't know. I don't remember if I ordered the Mahi Mahi. I don't think I did. I did. But somewhere in my life, I think I had Mahi Mahi, and I remember I know where I had it. Oh, I now remember. I went to Niagara Falls. Very romantic trip to Niagara Falls. And there was a restaurant in the hotel. Yes, and that's where I had the Mahi Mahi. Now I remember. But I do remember my reaction to the Mahi Mahi, and it was like, I don't even understand what I'm eating. This is like, it's just a fish, man. Why is it so expensive? Is it rare? No. Is it hard to catch? Does the Mahi like fool around and stuff? Like, you can't catch me. I'm a Mahi Mahi. Hey, I'm over here. I'm home and I'm over here. They're hard to catch. They should be more expensive. And I think they're readily available everywhere. So I don't quite understand what the problem is with the Mahi Mahi. I don't kind of get that. But I'll never have Mahi Mahi again. I think I've said Mahi Mahi too many times, as a matter of fact. And Mahi Mahi is not consistent, by the way. I do believe a Mahi Mahi from here would be different than a Mahi Mahi from there. There's no consistency in Mahi Mahi. Mahi Mahi. I don't even know what's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest today is someone that I so much revere. It's Paul Revere. No, it's not. It's Dr. Scott Adzik. He's been on the program before, like a year ago. He's going to join us again, brand new. This man is incredible. This man, I can't believe what he does for a living, man. He's a surgeon, and he works out of the Philadelphia Children's Hospital. And he does, get ready for this, he does fetal surgery. Not fetal. He goes inside a woman's lying there. She's pregnant. She's got a fetus in her belly. He goes in there through the woman's uterus or whatever that thing is. I don't know what it is. I don't have one. I can't talk about it because I don't have one. It's not fair. He goes in there and he does surgery on the fetus of the child or the fetal thing inside the woman. It's like double operation. It's like, whoa. I mean, it's not like the fetus comes out and he does an operation. He does the operation on the fetus inside the woman. How can you do this? I didn't even know it was physically possible to do something like that. I can't even get a splinter out of my finger. I fiddle with that thing for 6 hours before it comes out. And I was horrible at that game, Operation. Did you ever play that game when you were a kid? Are you old enough to remember that game? If you hit the side of the plastic wall, the little buzzer would go off. You'd have to take out little appendix and little tonsils. And I don't know if you played the game. If you don't know what the game is, then what I'm saying is making no sense whatsoever, which is feasible no matter what. I can't even play the operation game. I can't even get a blister. I can't even pop a blister without going into some type of shock. I can't get a splinter out. An eyelash in my eye, that'll last for days. I can't do anything about it. This guy's doing fetal surgery. Surgery on a little tiny fetus inside a woman. It makes no sense. It's not, I can't wrap my mind around it. It's like religion. I can't wrap my mind around it. So Dr. Scott Adzik joins us. He's quite a man. He's my man. And we'll join him right after these words.
Let's be honest. You are socially awkward. You've no idea how to start a polite conversation. You wouldn't know what to do or say if you stumbled into one. And when it comes to talking with members of the opposite sex, you're like a sixth grade wallflower at the school dance. You need help, and you know it. You need me, Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. For a courteous, prearranged fee, I am now offering wingman services for both men and women. Even if you've got the vocabulary range of a brain-damaged gibbon, with me at your side explaining to people what you rarely meant to say, every drool-drenched bit of drivel that slobs out of your scone hole will sound witty, erudite, and confident. And ladies, don't be shy. Take my arm and we'll go chat with the gent across the room with whom you've been exchanging glances all evening. Don't worry, he won't be intimidated by my extraordinary good looks. I guarantee he will only see me as your good British friend who happens to be incredibly gay. It's a service only I can provide, because I am Thompson St. Thomas, Fancy Bastard. So do let me know where we'll be going next, you and I.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you? It's pretty cold up there. My wife and I were trapped on
where?
Nantucket for 5 days last week.
Uh-oh.
Well,
you got it. Yeah. It was cold. And then the storm, winds and that kind of thing, my goodness. But that's the winter and that's it.
You were there in New England in 1978?
No, I wasn't. I missed that blizzard by like 3 months. I was in Rochester, New York, which wasn't much better, but yeah. Actually, we got.
I was a 1970.
Yeah, go on.
I was a Harvard medical student. You know.
Oh, so you got the full brunt of it there, huh?
Yeah, oh, the whole town was shut down.
Oh boy, yeah. You should move to Philadelphia.
Yeah, and I hear it's pretty nice in Philadelphia.
That's
they
have
good cheesesteaks too, and the football team may not be as good as the Patriots, but the Eagles are on the move.
Well, Dr. Scott Adzik joins us. We've spoken to him before. He's an amazing man. He does he performs fetal surgery, which I don't even understand how that's possible, but apparently it is. He's performed over 1,500 of those surgeries, and I have not even done one yet. So you're way ahead of me. A number that's staggering to me is that one out of every 33 births have a birth defect. That's pretty high.
Yeah, well, this is, I guess, one of the reasons why we're talking about it is that this is a Birth Defects Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And you're right, one in every 33 babies is born with a birth defect. So they're common, amazingly.
Yeah.
Some are minor, and others are major. They're costly. Birth defects cost billions of dollars required for medical treatment.
Mm-hmm.
They're merciless. No parent is immune.
Mm-hmm.
Mysterious. Most causes of birth defects are unknown. In my view, they're overlooked, and that research is underfunded, and they're deadly. Birth defects are the leading cause of infant mortality.
Wow. Now, when we talk about fetal surgery, and I mean, it's amazing to me that this can actually be performed in the fetus while in the womb, which is, I don't even understand how that's possible, but apparently it is. How often out of those, I mean, there are many types of birth defects, and as you say, some serious, some semi or not. How often out of that percentage does it require some type of fetal surgery? Is that very rare?
Well, that's a good question. Right. It is rare. So, for instance, at our Center for Fetal Diagnosis and Treatment at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, or CHOP, this year we'll evaluate about 2,000 pregnant mothers carrying babies with birth defects, and only about 10% will require a fetal surgical intervention. So we'll do about 200 of these operative cases. So 90% don't.
Okay.
But many require comprehensive care that we can provide before birth. Many require delivery in our special delivery unit at CHOP, so the baby can get immediate care after birth for a heart defect or a lung problem or a kidney problem or a brain problem. So it's important to have accurate information before birth for the parents, for parents, for prognostic counseling, so on and so forth.
Are there situations where fetal surgery is not considered because of the danger to the mother? Would that ever be a danger to her?
Yes, there's. For instance, we do a lot of fetal surgery for spina bifida, which, as you know, spina bifida is where the spinal cord doesn't have any skin or tissue covering, so it's exposed to amniotic fluid. The nerves are exposed to amniotic fluid, which is mostly fetal urine, which is very toxic to the developing nerve tissue. And so that's progressive before birth. So we do the repair before birth to prevent additional damage, to enhance the possibility that the baby will be able to walk as a child, and also to decrease the risk of hydrocephalus or fluid on the brain and the need for a shunt tube. Now, when we evaluate mothers for this, if she has a significant medical problem, then we just can't do the operation. Maternal safety is, you know, of the top five things. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So, so sometimes we have to turn down potential fetal surgery candidates because of maternal health sorts of issues.
Certain areas are famous and more effective for certain types of surgeries than others, and it's interesting that even we're talking about the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. There are people from throughout the world that actually go to have their surgeries done at that location for their specialties. Is that right?
Yeah, we've been. I've been here at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia as the Surgeon in Chief and the Medical Director of the Center for Fetal Diagnosis and Treatment since 1995. Mm-hmm. And since that time, we've had over 21,000 referrals, all 50 states, more than 60 countries outside the U.S.
Wow.
So, yes, and but we've also trained other fetal surgeons, if you will, who are building programs throughout the U.S., throughout Europe, throughout Asia, throughout the world, really. So it's become much more accepted. Folks are trained. It requires a team. And so the influence is spreading, which is good.
Interesting. I never understood how this was physically possible when a human being has to have something even so minute, surgery-wise, they have to be on IVs and carefully monitored. Now we're talking about a second life that's inside of that first life that has to be monitored. It's just like, it seems so complicated and so involved that it's amazing that this can even be accomplished.
Well, the idea came from my medical partner and mentor, Michael Harrison,
really?
Who's a pediatric surgeon now retired at University of California, San Francisco. So I went to work with him in the early 80s. And the rationale, I'm a pediatric a surgeon as well as a fetal surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And the rationale then was that we were taking care of babies who were freshly born, and we were too late to save them because the damage had already occurred progressively before birth. So the idea of correcting a birth defect before birth was viewed with extreme skepticism by the medical community. And we had to do work in experimental animal models, principally fetal sheep, to work things out, work out the techniques, and so on and so forth. So you're right. It was there had to be at least 100 reasons back in the 80s why that this couldn't work.
Crazy. Where do we get more information about this, Doctor?
Well, our website, I think, is a good source. It's fetalsurgery1word.shop. CHOP.edu. So fetalsurgery.shop.edu.
Wow. Amazing work. Thank you so much. And good to talk to you again. I'm sure we'll be speaking in the future. Thank you.
Okay, Ron. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Wow, man. That's incredible. It makes me feel so small to talk to a man like that. He's like a giant and I'm like a little pimple on his ass. Because he is so remarkable, man. Wow. I mean, when I'm on my deathbed, Ron, what did you do? I did a radio show and had some jobs and ate food. What about Scott Adsick, the fetal surgeon? He saved the lives of fetuses inside the woman. He saved lives? Ron, did you save any lives? No, I think I destroyed some lives.
Well, at least you had a mark on society, Ron. I wouldn't say that much, right?
I don't know. Whew, wow. I wouldn't want to be a hero, though. See, I would do the fetal surgery, but the only problem with that is you can't drink. You can't have alcohol. Scott, you want to go out drinking?
Sounds like fun, but I have to perform an operation on a fetus in the morning. So no.
Wow. That kind of takes the fun out of things. That's like the designated driver.
You want some alcohol? You want a couple of martinis?
I know, I got to drive people home.
Oh, that's a shame.
I mean, at least if you're not going to drink, let it be because you're a fetal surgeon, not because you have to drive somebody else home. That's not fun. At least come up with a decent reason for not drinking. But that's why I can't be a fetal surgeon, for that reason alone. And that's the only reason, actually. Also, I don't think I have the patience. I don't think if I got up in the morning, how are you feeling? I don't know. I got to do a fetal surgery in a couple of hours. And to be honest with you, I just don't feel like it today. I'm a little cranky, a little moody. I just don't feel like it. I'd rather go back to bed. Well, you got to do fetal surgery, though.
people are depending on you. I know. That's why I couldn't do it. I was not placed on this earth to be a hero. No, that wasn't the purpose. It was to be consistent about something that made no difference whatsoever. That was the purpose of me being here. Who's going to consume a lot of the food that's on the planet? Let's invent Ron. He'll eat most of it. Yeah, well, you know, I have a purpose. At least I have a purpose. What's your excuse? Huh? I'm out of time for today, and this is a good thing. I want to remind you that RonCon is coming up toward the end of this month, where there are conventions that are taking place all over the country and in some other countries as well, right through the summer. These are conventions. They're RonCon, where people dress up like me and walk around with my shitty attitude. And there's a duplicate of the car that I drive, and some old examples of my underpants. If you worship me and adore me, you'll want to show up to RonCon, and we'll be promoting that for quite a period of time until it's ad nauseum. And that's a very cool thing. Ladies and gentlemen, I am out of time, and you're out of patience, so I figure that's a match made in hell. Let's go with that. Until tomorrow, I wish you peace.